You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Nothing like a little Peter Cetera in Chicago singing there. Peter Cetera was probably one of the best self-harmonizers in the business.
What do you mean self-harmonizer? That sounds dirty.
He tracks himself, so he'll do another track of harmony and
put it together
with himself.
Oh, okay. Kind of like what Queen did.
Kind of like what Queen did, that's right.
They're pretty good at it.
They were great at it.
I'll shut up now.
Thank you. It's our Valentine's Day special, and Tim and I are having a spat. Francine Rivers, folks, my goodness. I never thought in a million years I would have... it's a little unfair to call her a romance novelist because she has done so much more than romance novels. But it's a Valentine's Day special, and I have to start off this interview with Francine by willingly admitting that I have never read a romance novel in my life. Now I've read a few fiction books here and there. Have you read a romance novel, Tim? Aside from stuff in school that we had to read, like
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, well, who's the guy that wrote that stuff?
Shakespeare.
That's right, Shakespeare.
I'm a drama teacher. I probably should know that.
You should know that.
No, I can't say I actually have read a romance novel.
Well, I know, the deal is, though, I know thousands, well, sorry, I don't know, but I know of a lot of people who have read Francine Rivers.
Guys included?
Yeah.
Like Peter.
Exactly, like Peter, who called in earlier and is driving up to Owen Sound.
Aurelia.
Aurelia, whatever. Don't mess a good story up with facts. Francine Rivers joins us on the phone. Hi, Francine.
Good afternoon.
What a pleasure to have you. I've heard nothing but lovely things about you. And, of course, I can't imagine a novelist of your esteem being a jerk. You seem like such a lovely person.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, as you're saying that you've never read a romance novel, that you very definitely have read romance nonfiction.
Let's see.
If you've read the Bible.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. Ugh.
Is that the Song of Solomon?
The entire Bible is a huge love story about God's love for us.
It is. It is. Well, listen, how are you today, Francine?
I'm fine.
You're still living in Northern California area?
I am.
Well done. I used to live at a place called Hume Lake Christian Camps. Do you know where that is?
I have heard of it. In fact, our grandson was there, I think, a week ago.
Get out of here.
No, really?
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah,
I spent four years
down there. I have a love affair with Australia and with California. I was in Australia for 5. Why am I talking about me? Anyway, listen, I want to summarize your story and then have a little bit of fun with you. Can we do that?
That's fine.
You grew up in a Christian home. You went away to college. You stopped going to church. You became pregnant, had an abortion. Your husband, Rick, was a friend from 5th grade. Your brother was sent overseas during Vietnam War, and then he was POW. Rick was in Da Nang. Your brother escaped. And then you guys eventually got married, you and Rick. Rick brought Vietnam into your marriage. You brought your 60s baggage. Then a little boy invited you to church. And then you had this home Bible study for over 27 years.
It's still going on.
Did I get it right?
You got it right.
That is quite
very good.
That's quite a story you've got.
Oh, I think we all have really incredible stories.
Yeah, but you have a very incredible story. And I think... there's something, a friend of mine, a guy I know named Frank Pastore. Do you know him at all?
I think so.
Yeah, he's got that radio show on KKLA, the Frank Pastore Show.
Uh-huh.
He surrendered to God and decided to follow Christ later in his life, as did you. And do you not think there's something different about people that become Christians later in life?
Well, I think we have a lot of regrets.
Oh, yeah.
There are times when I look back and I think, oh, I wish I had given my life to Christ early on, and then I wouldn't have made the mistakes that I did. But God takes the worst that we do, and he can turn it to good when we hand it over to him.
Do you think that, this is sort of painting people with a broad, you know, brush here, but do you think that people who become Christians later in life, because of those regrets, maybe have a capacity to love more, and they reek of grace a little more than those that have been Jesus' kids right from the get-go?
Well, possibly, but I know a number of people who've been Christians all their lives, and
they reek of grace, too.
They do, too. Yeah. In fact, it was a number of them that helped me find my way. Very special people. It's like there's so many that call themselves Christians but aren't, but you can really tell the difference when they are.
Right. Your first book was a Western Gothic romance. That sounds like John Wayne fell in love with Elvira.
Well, sort of. I had a lot of different things that I didn't even start reading until I was an adult, and it was my mother-in-law that was passing books to me. because I always knew I wanted to be a writer. I just didn't know what I wanted to write because I didn't like reading. But she gave me gothics and mysteries and westerns, and I loved all of them, historicals. And so I thought, well, why not combine all of the things that I love and write a story like that? So that's where the Western Gothic romance thing came in.
What kind of Francine would people come away with should they find one of your earlier Before Jesus books?
Well, I would hope they wouldn't. I would hope they wouldn't bother.
Really? Come on.
Steamy romance. That's what they were.
Oh, really?
And there's no real God element in them until later on. You can tell that I was looking in some of the later novels. But I never recommend those, and I have the rights back, and they're never going to be reprinted. But they pop up here and there.
Have you ever had someone come up to one of your speaking engagements with one of your old books and ask you to autograph them?
Not very often. But I did have a book that had been printed back in the 80s, and it was released, I think, in 2006 as a new release. And I got letters, what's this? And I didn't even know it was out there because it was an old publisher who had sold it to somebody else, and they published it as a new book. So I posted something online just saying, please, look at the copyright dates, because that was B.C.
Yeah.
That was before Christ, and you can see the difference that Christ made in my work as well as my life.
But Francine, were they, come on, they weren't trashy, were they?
Well, yeah, they were.
Oh, Francine, I had you up on such a pedestal.
Gee. Oh, well, that's not a place for me to be.
No, okay, all right. Little Birdie told me that you had a kind of a lengthy writer's block, and it had to do with Jesus.
I did. I had no idea what I was supposed to do. I tried. I mean, I tried for 3 years to write, and it just didn't work. And I believe that God did that purposely, because he was basically saying to me, you say you want to belong to me, but you don't even know who I am. And that's when we started the Bible study. And then we were also reading the one-year Bible, my husband and I. And I fell in love with Jesus, and I didn't care if I ever wrote again. And then, of course, God always throws something in there. We did the Minor Prophets, and it came to the book of Hosea. And that just broke through all the walls. I just thought, that's how much he loves me. That's how much he loves each of us. And then I felt, just kind of impelled to write the story in the genre that I had used before. It's very steamy. God's word can be very steamy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically redeeming love is Hosea written in its Old West scene. But it's God's story. It's an allegory about how much God loves us.
I haven't quite figured this out, but there's something about your story and Kay Arthur's story. You both came, surrendered to God later in life, and you both were involved in some, steamy things in life, and you both, were women of the world or whatever. And
there are lots of us from the 60s that learned all that free love stuff isn't true in a worldly sense.
Yeah.
But there is free love from God. There's a huge difference there.
Can we, do you mind, Francine, and by the way, we are talking to the one and only Francine Rivers. Can we just talk about the Christian fiction book scene today?
We can try.
And I know that whatever you say has weight because of who you are, and I can just be cheeky and say whatever I want. And so you've got to be guarded and filtered, and I don't even know how to spell those words. So I want to ask, if you have an opinion as to which Christian fiction book has had an incredible impact on our culture.
I don't know. I frankly don't know, because I think, all the writers that I know, the book that has the greatest impact on them is the Bible. Most of the writers that, I go to a brainstorming session every year, with a group of Christian writers, and we're all immersed in Scripture, and that's what we want to inform and form us.
Right, but as far as the Christian fiction books that people have been writing, whether it's the Peretti books or the Left Behind books or the Shack or whatever, are there books that stand out in your mind as ones that have had a really positive impact on our culture?
Well, I know what had an impact on me. When I read Frank Peretti's This Present Darkness,
mm-hmm.
and also I was reading Bodhi Taney's books, and I realized you can write fiction. Fiction is extremely powerful in presenting the message of Christ, because there are a lot of people out there that don't want to read the Bible, and they don't want to hear about Jesus, but they will read a story. And so if the message is woven in there, they get it that way, and then they hunger and thirst, and then they ask the questions. But as far as one Christian book that's the most important, I have no clue.
You know, I would venture a guess, and I would say The Chronicles of Narnia.
Okay.
I would put that out there, right? Tim, I'm looking at my engineer here. Tim, is there anything else you put in that category?
I mean, both Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. I mean, they were buddies, and both of them were such great men.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah. Both of them were very powerful.
Anything these days that stands out? I mean, look, The Shack really...
I think that's the modern one.
Yeah,
no question.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of love-hate out there for you. You know, you either hate it or you love it, I think. I personally, it had a big impact on me.
Just Screwtape Letters.
Screwtape Letters is another one.
Great C.S. Lewis.
Yeah. Wait, is there something missing these days when it comes to Christian fiction that... If you could wave the Francine Rivers magic wand, oh, we're not allowed to say magic, you know, and you could just sort of say, look, come on, everybody, let's get together and let's change the world and let's do it this way. Are there things about the world of Christian fiction these days that frustrate you, Francine?
No, because I really kind of stay out of it all. I'm so focused on what I'm trying to do. I call myself a selfish writer because I'm trying to find answers. Because I came to Christ later in life, I'm still a newbie, if you want to put it that way. You know, I'm studying Scripture. I'm asking questions about issues in my life. I don't have the answers. I use the characters to kind of voice the different points of view, and I'm reading God's Word trying to figure out what's God's perspective in all this. So I'm not looking to other writers for answers or inspiration. And I think there are a lot of us like that, and I think that the Christian market is becoming more real.
You think so?
People are becoming more transparent in what they're writing. And I mean, you go back 10-15 years, there were things that they didn't want to touch on, and now we need to touch on those things. We need to talk about the hard things in life and the problems we have. And becoming a Christian doesn't mean all of a sudden you have all the answers. It just means you know where to go to ask.
Well, speaking of not having all the answers, I want to go through a part of, I found this on your website, and I thought, boy, this really gives people a good snapshot of who you are.
Are you reading my blog?
Yes. I've been following you for many...
I didn't know somebody reads my blog.
Every book you've written since returning to your faith has come out of you questioning a certain aspect of your faith. For example, A Voice in the Wind. How do I share my faith with unsaved family members and friends who have no desire to read the Bible or hear me talk about my faith?
Yep, I want to be Hadassah. I want to be like Hadassah.
Is that the Prime Minister of Iran? Who is that?
That's the primary character of the book.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry.
Go ahead, Drew.
Okay, all right. An Echo in the Darkness. How many times are we called upon to forgive people who hurt us deliberately, and in many countries, who would like to see us dead? Wow.
Oh, you added that one in there, or did I put that in there?
No, that's in there. Come on.
I don't remember.
As sure as the dawn, how do you deal with anger, especially when there is good cause? What is righteous anger, and how does it look? What was the anger in that story, As Sure as Dawn?
As Sure as the Dawn centered on Atreides, who was the gladiator. And he had been a captive and forced into a life he didn't want. He was a warrior against Rome. And I was thinking, too, you know, my brother was a captive of the North Vietnamese for a while. My father-in-law spent 3 years in a Japanese prison camp during World War II.
Wow.
I mean, they saw horrendous things happen, and it impacted their lives in profound ways. And there was a lot of anger there, you know, anger that came out in not necessarily proper ways. And how do you deal with that? How do you turn that all over to God and allow him to change it?
Okay, now, there's a book I might actually pick up. As Sure as the Dawn, is there blood and violence in that at all?
There are gladiatorial fights, yes. I tried to make it realistic.
Gladiatorial sights.
Gladiatorial fights.
Oh, gladiatorial. I can't even say it. The Scarlet Thread. What does sovereignty mean in man's relationship with God? if he is in control of everything, what does that say about the bad things that happen to people? Boy, you're just picking light subjects to deal with, huh?
Well, that one, what I learned in that one, I traveled across the United States with a couple of friends going on the Oregon Trail, and I realized that, you know, the issues are the same all the time. We're all trying to figure out who's in control of my life. When you turn your life over to Christ, you can look back over your life and you can see where he was always there. But so many times we're just turning our backs, we're ignoring him, we're not willing to listen. But once you do start listening and you look back, you see him. You see him where he was reaching out, reaching in all along the way. That's the scarlet thread. There, you don't have to read it. There's the whole story.
You know what? You're actually enticing me into your books. I didn't think this was going to happen. No, come on, listen.
Listen, if you want a romance and you want read Redeeming Love.
Why?
If you have the courage, it has.
Oh, she throws it down.
Yeah, if you have the courage.
What do you? Hold on.
It's a definition of how we're supposed to be, and Michael in the story is like Christ. And the thing in the story is that sometimes it's the woman that has to be that person, sometimes it's the man, but it defines how are you supposed to be in a relationship.
Oh, now I know what you mean by if you have the guts. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The abortion thing, I hesitate bringing that up because, you know, it was a long time ago. I'm not sure whether you're comfortable about, you know, speaking about that, but I can imagine that it still is a key ingredient in the formation of who you are as a person, because that's a big deal.
Yes. Yeah. So, and the one I had was an illegal abortion during college years, and it was years before I could deal with it. And I had written a number of books, and I kept feeling like God was pushing me to write that one, to face up to that one. I used to go out for long walks and just argue with him, you know. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. You've forgiven me. Why do you keep bringing it up? And finally gave in and went to the local pregnancy counseling center, went through a class called Women of Rama, which was dealing with my post-abortion issues, because I'd lost children, too. I'd had miscarriages after the abortion, after Rick and I got married, and he was no part of that decision, but he still had to deal with the aftermath. And when I started working on it, I had these people around me basically praying for me and checking on me as I was going back and facing up to what I had done, the reasons for my decisions, all that kind of thing. But I wanted to deal with a heavy topic, too, because there are a lot of Christians who think, well, if it's rape, then it should be okay. But then I'm thinking, well, or incest. And you think about Ruth coming from the Moabites and that whole things started with incest. Mm-hmm. So there really, you know, there were just a lot of things in it. But by the time I finished working on the book, I felt free. And I realized that's why God wanted me to write it, because he'd forgiven me, but I hadn't forgiven myself and I hadn't been able to lay it down at the cross. And then my husband went through a post-abortion class for men who are living with post-abortive women and dealing with those issues, and it was the closest time we've had in our marriage. We've been married 42 years, and it just keeps getting better since then. We were remarried. We decided, let's just do our vows over again with our kids, went out to Doran Beach, kind of a hippie wedding, I guess you'd call it. But we had redid our vows out there with our kids there, and we just said, you always be honest and straightforward with each other, and deal with all your issues and move forward together with Christ at the center. Because, you know, if Christ is at the top of a love triangle, if God is at the top and the two of you are drawing closer to God, you're going to draw closer to each other. That book changed our marriage, and it changed our lives, and it really freed me.
I mean, when you found out that your mother also had an abortion?
Yes.
That must have just, like, freaked your head out.
Well, my mom told me before I wrote the book, and I remember sitting there with her, and she said, you would have had a 44-year-old brother. And she was crying, and I thought, does this guilt never end?
Wow.
And that was she is in the book. I mean, I'm Hannah. The character of Hannah is based on my story.
Now, which book is this?
This is The Atonement Child.
Okay.
And Evie in the story is my mother's story. And I have met Dinah's rape victims who decided to have the baby. So they're very personal. I mean, everybody in the story is impacted by abortion in some way. And I think many of the women that work in abortion clinics are post-abortive women. And that's the way they're dealing with it. It's kind of like, can I help other women do what I did, and maybe it'll make me less feel less the way I do.
Your mother and your grandmother were not close. Were you close with your mother?
I was close with my mother and my grandmother.
Oh.
And they were close for a while. It was only toward the end of my grandmother's life where something happened. And
what
I think my grandmother wanted to live with my mom, and they were building a house up in Oregon, and they were living in a 26-foot trailer while they were literally building their house from the ground up with their own hands. And Grandma decided, well, if I can't go, then I'm not ever going. And that's the way it stayed.
I think if I read this right somewhere, your grandmother had a stroke, and your mom hightailed it to get to her, but by the time she got there, your grandmother had already passed?
Yes. Oh. And my mom, you'd have to know my grandmother to understand this, but
did she do it on purpose?
Like she just deliberately died before she got there. You know, that's the feeling she had, that she just gave up before mom could get there.
Did your mom have tuberculosis?
Yes, she did.
Can you have any more bad stuff? You're like a walking country song.
I don't feel... Well, I have a dog. My husband had a truck for a year.
There are so many interesting aspects to your life.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
You don't think so?
Well, to me, it's not all that interesting. I know a lot of other people have more interesting stories.
You know, the only kind of unique thing that's happened to me in regards to this sort of melodrama playing out in one's life is the same night as my son was being born, my mom died.
Oh.
That was a heavy night.
Yeah, I would say so.
I was sobbing like a little schoolgirl when our son came out, and my wife looked at me and went, "You okay?"
Oh.
And what's wrong with you? I'm the one that did all the work. And I had to tell her.
Yeah.
Tough night. Tough night. Well, you sound as lovely as everyone told me you were going to sound or to be. I'm so happy that your life, well, how many years? 42 years of marriage?
42 years. Yep.
And daughter Shannon is doing well. You have two other kids as well. Your grandma, the whole thing?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Three kids. They're all married and five grandchildren.
Okay, let me finish this interview with a little Tiny Talentine question. That won't make any sense to you because I think that was a Canadian... Tim, was that a Canadian show? I think it was. Tiny Talentine?
Yeah, it was CTV.
But it's, you know, one of those silly little trivia questions. If Francine Rivers was stuck on a desert island, what CD would you have to play in the CD player that would plug into the palm tree? And what book would you take? And it can't be the Bible.
Oh, that's not fair.
Uh-huh. Can't be the Bible.
That's like taking a whole library with you.
No, it can't be the Bible.
Well, let's see.
CD and a book.
A CD, I'd probably take Handel's Messiah. I
Ooh.
Love that. And I would probably look for a survival book on how to live on a desert island.
Oh, she's a romantic and a pragmatist.
You know, how to fish and how to build a hut. And
you sound like a lot of fun. You are a lot of fun. Francine Rivers, it has been a pleasure to chat with you. I really appreciate you joining us for our Valentine's Day special. What a treat.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Francine. Bye-bye.
Bye.
FrancineRivers.com is where you want to go to find out more about that lady. I kind of like her. I want her to be my mommy.
She's cheeky.
She's cheeky, too.
Smart.
There's a lot of good... There's a good vibe there.
We've had some good
Why
vibe
Why am I gushing
day?
Over... Anyway.
Because you're a... You're Goof. A romantic at heart.
I am a romantic.
You've been lying. You read every one of those books.
I have.
Hey, Peter, we're going to start a book club, you and
but
Drew.
Stop talking about Peter. He's not listening anymore.
Yes, he is.
Folks, a short break. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250. Through the storm, we reach the
shore. You give it all. Hey, folks, I want to tell you about the Drew Marshall Show 1250 special. You ready for this? For $12.50, that's right, only $12.50, we'll mention your organization's name, website, and a brief description. Did you catch that? During each show, we'll read out your organization's name, website, and a brief description for only $12.50. Now, obviously, there's no point in doing that only once during a four-hour show, so we'll read your advertisement four times per show for an entire month, and each time we do it, it'll only cost you $12.50. It's kind of like putting an advertisement up on every church bulletin in the GTA. Except you don't have to get permission from that grumpy old lady at the front desk. Now look, because there are limited spots available for our $12.50 special, why don't you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250. Now sure, we're right in the middle of things here in the show, but if you call us right now, toll-free, on 877-JOY-1250, we'll take your name and number and call you back on Monday to sign up for the Drew Marshall Show $12.50 special. This is nuts. Are you sure we want to do this? How am I supposed to make any money?